Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this suddenly sunny Wednesday, April 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your automotive questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your car calls, and they usually come in pretty plentifully. So I would call early, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. So if your car motor is rattling or if the undercarriage is wobbling a bit, this is the time to call with your question, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here. The show begins after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, beginning at Factory Mechanics Training School in Wolfsburg, Germany, back in 1979. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be here.
Hey, you know, a blizzard 3 weeks ago, and now suddenly it almost looks like driving weather.
You know, it's getting nicer today. It wasn't bad getting out of the car just now.
It'll get bad again tonight, but...
But look at Monday, Tuesday. 70s.
Yeah, it's about time.
People will complain it's too hot.
About time to hit the road, crank up the AC, make sure you have enough, not Freon anymore.
Let's just call it refrigerant.
Refrigerant.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we promote the show earlier in the day, and we actually had an email a couple of hours ago from D, who writes, I just ordered my 2017 Mini Cooper 6-speed manual. I should receive it in about 6 weeks. Question: is it still important to have a break-in period when first driving a brand new car? And if so, for how many miles?
Yeah, it's a good question. Love because that was a major event years ago.
Yeah.
Breaking in your new car.
Don't go over 50.
Yes, truck, motorcycle, whatever it is. Something with an engine and gears and mechanics.
Yep.
There's really no break-in period anymore.
Why?
When you read the owner's manual, it just tells you drive normally. Years ago, they thought that it was... better to not operate the engine at steady speeds for prolonged periods of time. Don't rev it too high. Don't let it idle too long. And that was to get the piston rings seated and all the moving parts that may have slightly tight tolerances from manufacture. It might be some little tight spots here and there, so they don't get shocked or overdone and they quote break in or wear in. Machining has gotten so much better. Tolerances are tighter. And just the whole engine is more precise, as are the transmissions and drivetrains. So the rule of thumb used to be don't over rev it, don't idle too much, and don't stay stuck at the same speed for hours and hours and hours. But I think when she gets her new car and looks at her owner's manual, it probably won't have much to say about that.
When did that change?
I don't know. Maybe you stopped seeing that 10 years ago. I'm just guessing, but you don't see a lot of it or hear about it.
Back in the 80s, I had a Hyundai Excel. It was one of my...
Those are the early years for Hyundais.
I was just in the job market, bought one. I think I drove it straight down to Jacksonville, Florida to see my grandmother.
Right off the bat.
Yeah, and the thing went forever. Yeah. No, never an issue with that. And, I probably drove it 70 miles an hour the whole way.
Absolutely. You had to get there.
Let's see here. Oh, man, the phone lines are loading up, so let's start it right away. 800-348-2551. Carol in East Fishkill. Carol, you're on.
Hi, yes, it's me. Hi, Ray. Hi, Mr. Fricke.
Hi. Hello.
I have mice in my air filters. That's causing me problems.
Mice.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
You're talking the engine air filter or the cabin air filter that brings the air into the car? Are they getting in the vehicle?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they will gnaw at the engine's air filter and also the cabin's air filter if your car has one. What kind of car is it?
It's a Toyota Corolla 06.
Yeah. Some cars don't have cabin air filters. Others do. There's usually some type of a screen or a mesh to prevent animals from getting into your car.
Really?
Where the air comes in for your heating and ventilation. And a lot of cars also have a an air filter to filter the incoming air, take out pollen and dust and stuff like that. But yes, common for mice to go in there and gnaw that stuff up. I don't know if they take it away and make a nest, but...
But they make a nest right in the filter.
They can and do.
They've showed me that, you know, at the auto place.
Yes, they can and do. And how to keep them out is a question we get a lot.
Yes, indeed.
And we've tried to answer it a number of different ways with... you can buy some various repellents at like a hardware store. You can put a electronic mouse evader, a rodent evader, plugged in the garage near the vehicle or in the car.
I've done that.
Yeah, various scents.
I have lots of mouse traps around. I caught a couple of them, but
the short answer is I don't know. You can try all that stuff, and we get cars in constantly.
Really?
Rodent issues.
Well, the last time my engine light came on, and I took it over to the dealer, and they said it was because of the mice getting into the. I don't know, computer area or wherever they have that. I don't know. It cost me a lot of money to get it, you know.
We've had them gnaw through wires, cause the car to run poorly, check engine lights on, things aren't working. If you're lucky, you'll find the wire that they gnawed through and you can fix it. But
I have it in the garage. I mean, I was thinking maybe I'll park it outside. Maybe they won't like it out there.
You could try it. Of course, that defeats the purpose of having your nice garage where you could keep your car
inside.
Yes,
it does.
Yeah. But... I've heard of different scents, you know, peppermint and things like that.
Mint will work, I think. Yeah.
But I don't have a good.
Or just spray it around in that area?
You could, if you had packets or something, you could put that underneath the cowl, you know, where the windshield wipers are located. That's where the air enters the car. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to overpower you in the car breathing in heavy. Sense of peppermint or a lot of people use mothballs.
Someone told me about the dryer sheets, so I put some of those in the glove compartment.
Yep.
I put the box on top of the car when I'm done with it, you know.
Hmm. Yeah. How about a kitty cat? How about a cat for the garage?
I know, but then you have that litter box problem. I don't like cleaning it, litter boxes. All right.
Good luck with it because you're not alone.
I was wondering whether there was some kind of, you know, cover that would... But then I guess that would defeat the thing of the air, you know.
Yeah. The electronic thing didn't work for you? I know it's
snake oil.
And I guess there's no scientific reason for it, but I've had success with those, I swear to you.
Just to add some real quick thing, I do have a customer that has a serious mouse problem, and he got some screening at the hardware store, and not super fine, but he fabricated like a fence in front of the intake of the air that goes into the car, into the cabin filter. And somebody could also fabricate that where the air goes into the engine's air cleaner. And that might work. That would be a thought.
And they don't sell things like that.
Got to be handmade.
Hardware stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
you're
Carl.
Welcome.
Or Carol, that is, not Carl, obviously. Sharon in East Greenbush. Sharon, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, Gordon. I have a question about, I believe I have a variable speed transmission, and we have a Lexus RX 400 hybrid, and then we have a Honda Civic hybrid. And my husband likes to put the vehicle in low gear when we go down mountains, and I always feel like we're stressing the transmission when in my mind I'm thinking that it's cheaper to replace brakes than it is to wreck your transmission. Cause we try to use the vehicle till it's dead, you know? So we usually get like 250, 300,000 miles on the vehicle. So I'm not looking to get rid of it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Well, that low range.
Do you have an opinion?
Yeah. Well, that low range is there for such reasons as going up super steep hills, mountain climbing, where the transmission is searching to go higher and it's struggling and it shifts up and down and up and down and up and down. So you just hold it in a lower position and climb the mountain. On the other hand, you can do the same thing going down the mountain, and the engine will help.
So he is using it correctly.
Yeah, he's not abusing it by any means. if you read your owner's manual, it might tell you to keep an eye on your tachometer and not.
Is there a tachometer on the vehicle?
I think there.
Yes, there is on the Honda.
Yeah.
On the Lexus.
There may not be.
I don't think so.
Yeah. These are automatics.
Well, they're both hybrids, both. Ray. So they're using electric motors to propel the vehicle. It's not a conventional transmission.
Oh, I see.
But they do offer you that option to keep it in a lower speed.
Sure.
So he's not abusing it. If the owner's manual gives you a little more detail, they might tell you to not to exceed certain speeds in certain ranges, and that's all you need to keep in mind. But it won't harm it.
Okay.
Well, good luck.
So overall, it's not like my thought of just use the brakes, and then you're not. I don't know. It's whole switching it from drive to low when the car is moving that makes me feel like you're just asking to have trouble.
If he's doing it,
you know what I mean?
If he's doing it 99% of the time, maybe he's overdoing it a little bit. But for those steep upgrades and steep downgrades, it's totally acceptable.
But what speed do you switch over? I think that was where she was going.
Well, it depends on the vehicle. You know, I mean, it depends on the engine RPM and the speed. And I bet the owner's manual says if you want to stay at, let's say, 35 or 40, keep it in this range. But if you want to go faster, get it into the next.
In bad weather, I've switched down to third or second in my automatic.
Yeah.
But only when I'm going really slowly.
Yeah, and it's good because it feels like you're a little bit in more control rather than relying purely on the brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
800-348-2551, the telephone number. Gordon Fricke, our guest, and we will be right back.
Support for WMT comes from Viva Fresh Pasta. 30 years and 30 wines by the glass. European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com. Vermont Coffee Company. Offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company. Coffee roasted for friends. Lathrop Communities. Independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts. Serving older adults in the Quaker tradition. Together, transforming the experience of aging. Lathrop.Kendall.org. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org.
Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here on a Wednesday afternoon with Gordon Fricke, and we talk automotive maintenance and repair. Our number is 800-348-2551, or you can call or write, I should say, at voxpopwamc.org. All right, this one came in via email at voxpop@wamc.org from Joyce, who says, I had an oil change with full synthetic in December, which is supposed to be good for 5,000 miles. Now it's 4 months later, and I've only driven 3,000 miles. Is my oil still good for 2,000 miles more?
Yeah.
It's the age-old question.
It is. It is. We hear it a lot. And it's a very. It's good that people are thinking about it because the synthetic oil, as we've talked about before, is capable of lasting longer than conventional oil by
right.
the chemistry and all the additives that go in it. The question is, if it becomes too saturated with debris, carbon, moisture, all kinds of bad things that occur in the engine, particularly in the winter. If the car's idled a lot, warmed up for extended periods of time, driven around town, stop and go, the oil gets too full of junk and it turns very, very dark. And you can take the oil cap off and sometimes see a lot of moisture under it. So that becomes a judgment. Somebody that knows what they're looking at can pull the stick, look at it, look under the cap, and make a judgment saying, you know, your oil looks horrendous, even though you've only got 3,000 miles on it. You really should get it done. It's very cheap insurance.
Right.
You may pull that stick and the oil looks brand new, and they say, go to the 5,000 mark. So somebody's got to look at it and make a judgment.
Someone who knows what they're looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, over to Tom in Windsor, Mass. Tom, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Yeah, thanks for taking my calls, guys. Listen, I've got an oil question, but this has got to do with the viscosity of the oil. Okay, I got a 2016 Tacoma, Toyota Tacoma, and I think they recommend 0-20, and I'm not sure as if they're doing that just to get better, higher gas mileage postings. Is it safe, or can I go up like to a 5-20, and would that be okay, or would that void my warranty?
Yeah, good question, and it's true what you're saying. It is there to the lower viscosity oils allow the engine to turn more freely. So the engine is not spending horsepower on turning itself. Mm-hmm. So you get a little bit better gas mileage. And the tolerances today on engines and the machining is much more precise. So thinner oil works just fine because it doesn't need to fill up big gaps of giant engines that might be loosely constructed. Look in your owner's manual, and there will be a table, and it'll tell you what weights of oil are acceptable based on the temperature.
The outside temperature.
Yes, and it will show you that you certainly can go to probably a 5. Your truck calls for 5-20?
Yeah.
Or 0-20.
0-20, which kind of scares me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. Yeah, I know. I thought the same thing years ago. I'm thinking, what are they doing? This stuff is getting so thin. Look in your owner's manual, follow the chart, and don't go above or beyond what they recommend just to be safe while you're in warranty in case there's an issue.
Now, how would they know if Tom put in the wrong viscosity?
They wouldn't.
And then you had the right viscosity in, and then there was engine trouble.
Very difficult. You couldn't analyze that oil after 5,000 miles and tell you what it was.
Explain to me, if you know, what the numbers mean. So you have 10W30, let's say. What is the 10 and what is the 30?
Okay, 10 is the ability for the oil to flow, a test flow at a given temperature. So the lower the number, the colder that oil will still flow.
Is that in Fahrenheit? With 10 degrees Fahrenheit? Is that what we're
no,
talking?
No, that those aren't temperature numbers. That's the scientific numbers that they've designated to the oil.
10, so zero would flow.
So a viscosity of 10 will flow at colder temperatures than a viscosity of, let's say, 30 or 40 or 50.
Okay.
So the higher the number, the thicker the oil.
Okay.
That's how that works.
And will there be significant increase in length of life of a thicker viscosity?
I don't think so. Although years ago, and maybe even today, racing oils were always of a higher viscosity because these engines were being run to the extreme. Super high temperatures, a lot of RPM, you know, major abuse. So a lot of your racing oils were 20, 50, 50 weight, 40 weight, 70 weight.
Yeah.
But, you know, we aren't in race cars in the real world here. We're trying to get the engine started at 10 below zero and get to work and all that. So that's why the multi-viscosity, and that's why they're thinner now.
So if you lived in Mexico, you can do a 30
absolutely.
Without a problem.
Yep.
All right. Over to David in Woodstock. All right, David.
Hi. I'm calling just to say that a couple of years ago, I switched my engine, my Mini Cooper 2014 Roadster, over to ethanol-free gasoline. And I also use ethanol-free gasoline in all my small engines, my lawnmower, chainsaw, et cetera. And I did it with the small engines to increase the life of the engine because the ethanol destroys a lot of the small components in the induction system. When I switched over my Mini Cooper, I noticed I got about a 10% increase in gas mileage. And I just wanted to commend that to your listeners, especially the people on Mini Coopers, like the first woman who sent you an email. And for her, by the way, I would also recommend that she name her car and sing happy birthday to it every 1,000 miles. This may sound silly, but I got 365,000 miles on my Toyota and 313,000 miles on my Mini Cooper, the last Mini Cooper. And so, almost 700,000 miles on the last two cars. So I think it's working.
And you think it's the singing?
No, it's the names.
It's absolutely singing happy birthday, yeah.
Hmm. Very strange.
Very good.
Hey, but all right, so I'm a little confused. Now, the ethanol, if you get 10% better gas mileage, it's usually 10% more expensive to get the non-ethanol, right? Where's the savings?
Yeah, it's not a dollar saving. It's just an environmental saving. And also, I like the idea of not supporting the Iowa corn growers.
Huh. Okay. What'd they do to you?
I mean, they because they're the first caucus, they have an immense amount of, a disproportionate amount of influence in the political system, and they got a bill passed by Congress to convert food into a poor substitute for gasoline.
Yeah. All right, I dig it.
It gives them a lot of money.
Well, thanks, David. We appreciate that one. And over to Joe in Middletown. Joe.
Yes, question about checking the oil. Reading the stick on my Toyota or Subaru Forester. So even after the car has sat for a couple hours before I check it, the reading on one side of the stick is lower than the reading on the other side of the stick significantly. There's not like an even line. Which side do you go with?
Yeah, that's a good question, because
is it just me or is that happening?
No, it happens a lot. The stick goes in at an angle on most oil pans. Some cars, they kind of poke straight down, but when it goes in on an angle, you would think that it would just cover the stick and there wouldn't be a major difference between one end or the other, but sometimes the stick does a bit of a bend when it goes into the oil. You can do a couple things. You can, when you put the stick in to do the reading, leave it in there for, 10, 15 seconds rather than just quick in and out and then check it. So the oil will creep up to the right level. Sometimes you can give it a turn and it'll spin the stick inside the tube and you'll get the reading. But, I other than not doing that, I don't know if you should average the two, because one is higher than the other. I know exactly what you're saying. So you shouldn't think it's at the highest point and not think it's the lowest mark. It could be in the middle of the two.
Maybe do it like 30 or 40 times, Joe.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I do a couple. And then the other thing, sometimes the reading is, I guess it's the same answer, the reading on the edge of the stick shows oil, and then down the middle of the stick shows no oil. Huh.
Yeah, try that. Just try to leave it in during
leave
your reading
in there,
much
okay.
longer than you normally do, and just see what you get for a new check. See what happens.
And on the oil weight, you said the first number, the lower the first number, the lower the temperature, the oil will still flow.
Correct.
But you didn't say what the second number is.
The second number relates to the hot temperature. So 10. Let's say 10, you got a 0W20. So 0 is the cold point, 20 is the hot point. And then you can bring that up to, let's say, a 540, which has a big spread. A lot of European cars call for 540. So the hotter it gets, the more that oil can stand the heat and get thicker. It does it molecularly. It gets thicker with polymers.
There you go.
So the higher the second number, the higher the temperature, the oil can still stand.
Exactly. Sahara Desert, you want high numbers. Antarctic, you want low numbers.
Joe, thank you very much. And that's why race cars will use a 50.
A lot of times they'll use a straight weight because they're on the track all day at the day's temperature of the track, and the engine's temperature is going to be super hot the whole time.
How hot will a racing car engine get?
Well, the coolant temp is going to be maintained similar to the car on the road, which is sometimes 190 degrees, 200 degrees, but I'm sure under high heat, full race screaming conditions, you're probably getting 250 degree water temperatures, maybe more. And that's why the water has to be under pressure.
They're using water, nothing fancy or exotic.
I don't know if they're using any antifreeze, because water itself is the best coolant. The more antifreeze, the thicker it gets with antifreeze, the less efficient it is to take the heat away.
So air-cooled is out of the question.
Now you're going back to Volkswagens and Porsches.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's go to Noah in New Paltz. Noah.
Yeah, hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call, Van Gordon.
Sure.
I have a BMW 745 Li, and the check engine light came on about a year ago, actually, and it said something about a sub-blower assembly that is causing the problem. I've had it looked at by several mechanics trying to get it fixed. But for some reason, say, I was able to get it off long enough to get the car inspected, but it came back on within a few weeks. And I was wondering if you had any knowledge of it, since you were trained over there.
Tell me what the code reads again.
Oh, I can't remember exactly what the code is. It's a sub-blower assembly.
Sub Blower or blower?
Blower. Blower, B-L-O-W-E-R.
Do you remember what...
Oh, it's a secondary. No, I didn't write the code down.
What year is the car?
It's 2005.
Was there any talk...
It only has...
Was there any talk about secondary air?
That was it, secondary air.
Secondary air, okay,
secondary.
Yeah. Yeah, the secondary air has to do with... When you start the engine cold, additional air is blasted into the exhaust stream to help burn up the unburnt fuel when the engine hasn't reached operating temperature. It's purely an emissions device, and that blower is an electric motor on your car. And that motor comes on for 30 to 120 seconds, roughly, after a cold start. Then it shuts off. It never comes on again until the next cold start. There could be a number of causes for that not functioning. Could be the blower itself. Could have burned out the big fuse. It's a heavy consumer. There's a relay that operates it. There's hoses. There's a lot of stuff involved in secondary air.
But is that an inspection killer?
If the light is on, yes. Yeah, yeah. And it's a common problem with a lot of cars. Secondary air.
All right, Noah, thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, the guest, and Peter in Delmar is on. Peter.
Hey, Gordon. I recently brought my car to the dealership for a recall. And when he gave me the car back, he said, well, there are a few things that maintenance shows that are needed. And one of them was spark plugs. And so I said, okay, you know, that was fine. And so I didn't look until I got home, and when it was listed as spark plugs, $400.
Yikes!
So
70 spark plugs?
I called him back, and I said, you've got spark plugs listed at $400. And he said, well, that's the V6. And I said, no, my car is the four-cylinder. He said, well, it takes a while to get to the V6 because the engine is mounted sideways. And I said, no, mine's the four-cylinder. And he says, oh, it's $169. I said, oh, okay, fine. So my question is, would he have charged me $400 if, for example, I had brought the car and said to him, do the spark plugs, and like many people who bring cars in, would not said anything or not known any more about it than the average person?
Well, that's a tough question for Gordon to answer.
Well, did they present you with the bill at pickup time, or did he, or is this
no,
when he called
didn't,
you?
No, I chose not to have it done. He put it down as a recommendation.
I see, okay, yeah.
And he said, you need spark plugs at 100,000 and coolant, you know, exchange. And I said, okay, I'll call back, you know, if I want that done.
Sure, sure.
And so the spark plugs, when I got home and I looked, I said, $400, that seemed to be a lot. And he said, oh, those are for the V6. And I said, this is a four-cylinder car.
Yeah.
He said, oh, okay, it's $169.
So they've got...
I didn't choose to have it done. I can do the spark plugs on the four-cylinder car very easily because they're right from the top.
Yeah. They've probably got just some a menu of basic services. So spark plugs on the V6 is X dollars for.
Right.
And I think they probably weren't even investigating how many cylinders you had at that time. I would imagine if you said, yes, could you go ahead and do it, I would hope that they would say, well, this guy's got a four-cylinder, so it's the lower number, you know.
$400 to do six-cylinder plugs?
Here's the thing. Depending on the vehicle and how the engine is set up, the labor time to change some of those spark plugs is really, really insane. You have to take sometimes the intake manifold off to get to the plugs. So you might have 4 or 5 hours in a spark plug change. And spark plugs today aren't $2.50 anymore. A lot of the iridium and laser platinum plugs can be $18, $19, $20 bucks a piece.
I'll take that. But with all due respect to the automotive industry, design the vehicle so the plugs can be easily replaced.
We yell about that about every day when we have to change, let's say, a thermostat that used to take an hour, takes five, because you have to take everything out of the way to get to it. The packaging is sometimes insane.
So really half of your hourly rate is annoyance fee, if you think about
it. It's moving things out of the way to get to what you're after.
Drives me crazy. Scott in Halifax. Is it Halifax, Nova Scotia?
Nope, Vermont.
Ah, well, you're on all the same. Scott, welcome to the show.
I've got some, okay, thank you. I've got some advice. I have several motorcycles that I store over the winter to keep mice out of the airbox where the airbox intake is.
Yeah.
I plug them up with paper towels saturated in WD-40.
Hmm.
That seems to work. Keeps the mice out of the airbox.
They don't like the chemicals in the WD-40, apparently.
Nothing else. Yeah, you can
exactly
lubricate
they
the
like
mice.
Paper towels. It's good insulation for making a nest.
I think that's
they don't
one
like
of
the paper towels saturated in WD-40.
WD-40 has so many uses, but I don't think this is on the can.
No, it's flammable too.
Yes, it is.
You know.
But anyway, that's all what I have to say.
Well, hey, Scott, nice. Thanks a lot. That's an interesting one, huh?
Very good.
Okay, well, let's spin the wheel again and see what else we get. Let's go to Freya and Olive, something or other.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
Ray and Gordon, what a pleasure.
Hi.
Okay. All right, let me tell you, I have been driving for a lot of years, and I don't know why, but just recently I drive a Chrysler 200, 2014, drives beautifully. I bought it used, but it's had 1,000 miles on it when I bought it, so it was great. In any event, I have found that if I put it, we are in a mountainous area, and if I put it in neutral, going down the mountain, I am getting now over 30 miles per gallon.
Mm.
And I'm wondering, is this okay, or am I hurting anything automatic? And so I'm just wondering, am I hurting anything in it?
Yeah, usually
by putting it in neutral when I drive down the mountain. I mean, I can go 4, 5, 6 miles without having it in gear.
The normal answer is you're not hurting anything.
Okay.
So the question also becomes, it'd be interesting to do an experiment. Do your normal routine for 1 week doing what you're doing, putting in neutral. And then try
right.
it, leaving it in gear the whole time. See if you get any better economy. I'm just curious.
Well, that's what Freya says. She's getting better economy.
Well, I'm just,
I do.
So have you done
because
your...
Because I didn't do it to begin with the car. And then, you see, I used to, as a kid, I used to drive sports cars. And I used to put it in neutral all the time to come down a mountain or come down a hillside
right.
or whatever.
Well, in the early days, many cars had stick
manual
transmissions.
Easy.
So
yeah,
you could...
I've been driving over 60 years, so, and I started driving at 14, so I have a lot of experience with driving, but it occurred to me, I never even thought about with an automatic transmission, if I was in fact doing anything that was harming the car.
What about the brakes, though?
I mean,
you're riding the brakes 5 miles down a hill?
No. If I never go that fast, I put the brakes on if I'm, we're not going down mountains,
we're going
down hillsides and that kind of thing. And there's a lot of places I may put it into gear and then shoot up another hill and then put it into neutral again, but it saves. I have never been up to 30 miles per gallon in this area ever with this car. But now I am by driving this way. I was usually at about 22, 23 miles per gallon.
That's great. Hey, listen, we got a break here. You love driving, though, don't you, Freya?
I do. I love to drive.
I love driving.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
I just want to know if it's okay.
I think you're okay doing that.
All right, we got to take a break here. We're overdue. Zach, there we go with the music. It's 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here. The home stretch straight ahead.
Support for WMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans. Hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons, GrapesandGrainsWine.com. The Preservation League of New York State, presenting John Freeman Gill, author of The Gargoyle Hunters, Friday, June 2nd, University Club of Albany, So Our Past Has a Future, preserveNYS.org. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and no-moo dairy-free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 2:43 on your Wednesday afternoon. Gordon Fricke is our guest today, and the email address is voxpopwamc.org. And Gordon, before we get back to the calls, this one from Mike in Saugerties. I have a 2006 Saab 93. It's a 2.0 five-speed manual. I currently have the trademark ever-present Saab check engine light on my throttle position sensor, specifically saying AB voltage correlation. I was told by the previous owner that the TPS has been replaced multiple times and the light continues to reappear. I don't see any noticeable effect from this, possibly some pedal lag, but that could just be in my head. Why might the light keep reappearing?
Yeah, that car, as well as just about everything today, is throttle by wire. Mm-hmm. So when you step on the accelerator pedal, an electronic signal goes to the computer that then goes to the engine's throttle plate to speed up and slow down. And it's a redundant system. There's two of each. There's two transducers behind the pedal, and there's two throttle position units out at the engine. So if one fails, you got a backup system. Mm-hmm. So he keeps getting a flag that there's a problem in the correlation. Maybe one of them is the voltage isn't right and the computer doesn't like it, but it doesn't shut it down. He doesn't lose his ability to throttle the engine. The problem could be up in the pedals inside the car as well. But it requires hooking it up to a scan tool and watching the readings when you slowly depress the throttle and slowly reduce it, looking for glitches, brakes, open circuits, or any connection in between the two. So he can keep driving it the way he has, but that check engine light's going to jinx his inspection sooner or later.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. Sylvia in Albany. Sylvia, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes, I have a 2000 Avalon, and my radio has the CD and the tape. The CD got stuck, and one of my speakers are not working. I took it to one of the auto places, and they say that they don't carry them anymore because everyone uses the phone system. Is there a way that I can take the tape out? Do I have to take it apart? And to replace the system itself.
Well, one option you have is to find a used one.
Like eBay.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the car's getting older, so you may not find that unit available at your local salvage yard because they're, you know, working on and dismantling and selling parts on newer cars. But I think if you had an internet-savvy individual, maybe you yourself could get on the internet and, like Ray said, eBay, search for that unit. You may very well find a good operating used radio, CD, you know, the whole combo, and then just get your shop to swap it out. And if it's good, you should be all set.
The getting the CD out is a tricky thing.
Can be.
And I know one of my kids put a stick from a lollipop in my CD player in my van, and it never worked again. I took the whole thing out, tried to fix it, and ended up like messing the entire thing
up. Didn't even play the lollipop song? I mean,
it didn't. So, well, good luck with that. And the speaker should be fairly easily replaceable, Sylvia.
Okay, one other question. My windshield wipers, I have the three levels. And on the intermediate part, it doesn't work. On the fast, it does. Should I just replace the motor, or is there anything else that I can do?
Does low speed work or just high?
No, the medium speed does not work.
Okay, so your intermittent wipers work, your low speed doesn't work, and your high speed does work.
Correct.
Okay. I don't know if you can blame the motor. It's got to be tested because it could be in your switch. The switch might not be sending the low speed signal out to the wiper motor. So somebody's going to have to test it for
maybe
you.
Maybe clean it? Is there a way you can put some deoxid on there or something?
It's hard to get in there because the switch is behind the steering wheel and all that stuff. But
Yeah,
that's what I was wondering if that's the case. The car is in good condition. No problem with the car itself. It's just those little extra.
Yeah.
Still, it'll drive you nuts.
Right. So just check the switch,
I think it would be nice to get it diagnosed and determine which of the two it is, because you don't want to guess and replace the motor and then have the same problem be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks.
Right. So that the outside, the little part that the windshields go on top, that's at the windshield top, the bottom of the windshield.
Yep.
Can I just exchange the level that it stops at? Because it stops like, it doesn't always go all the way down.
Oh, you mean they're not parking in the right spot anymore?
Uh-huh.
Correct.
Well, then it's very possible that it is the motor, because sometimes when the wipers get turned on frozen to the windshield or a snow load and they stay on too long, or they can't park because they're jammed with snow and ice, it burns out the park part of the wiper motor, and they never know where to stop anymore.
There you go.
So it's possible that your wiper motor is the cause.
Sylvia, thank you for that. 800-348-2551. Tom in Fonda. Tom, you're on.
Hi. I think this is a variable speed transmission question, but I get a new car, and when I use the cruise control, going downhill, it revs up a couple extra thousand RPMs. Mm. Quite frustrating. You know, you're trying to get good mileage and using your cruise control. Are all variable speed transmissions now prone to doing that?
Most of them are, yeah. And even your current automatics, and today's automatics have more speeds than they used to. You know, it used to be a 2-speed, then it was a 3-speed, then it's a 4-speed. Now there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-speed automatics. So when the computer senses that your foot is off of the throttle and you are maybe on the brake pedal by turning the brake light on, the engine or the computer knows you're slowing down, it will say, okay, looks like the guy wants to go, or the driver wants to go slower. It'll shift the transmission down for you automatically. And it will do that. It's very, very common to you hear the engine start to rev up, your tach jumps, and you're thinking, there's something wrong with my transmission, but it's doing it to help decelerate you or slow you down or maintain the speed. So I don't think that can be programmed out. It's pretty normal now.
All right. With the old Toyota, it didn't do that. And I guess sometimes we probably were rolling downhill faster than we had set the cruise control.
Yes.
So yeah. I suppose that. All right.
Yeah. It's all.
I had a comment on the rolling down the hill.
Yeah.
I think you just should know that's a violation of the New York State Vehicle and Traffic Law.
Yes.
You're kidding me.
Well, no, we had somebody call that into us,
why?
Ray, like a year or two ago.
I mean, why legislate that?
Well, there's multiple reasons. One is you've lost some control of your car when the engine is slowing you down, going down a hill. If an emergency occurs and you've got to get control of the car again, you now have to shift it into gear to drive.
Yeah.
The theory, and it's a moving violation. And if you have an accident, probably increases your liability.
Okay.
If you somebody else hits you while you're coasting down a hill,
you're
going to be responsible.
Oh, thank you, Nanny State.
I think we've got to turn in that caller on this.
We have to
call her. Or is she still listening?
Oh,
yeah.
Boy, listen, we don't know where she's from. We don't know if it's her real name. Sheila in Heath, Mass. Sheila, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a new Mitsubishi Mirage, and it has about 25,000 miles on it. I did buy it brand new. And when I come to a stop, and it doesn't always happen, but it happens about like 60% of the time, when I give it to the gas and I don't like put it down fast, it doesn't seem to catch. And when it does, it jerks the whole car, and then it's fine.
How often?
I wonder if that.
Yeah, does this happen regularly, or is this just a very once in a great?
No, it happens quite often. And I did have an end to the where I had bought it, and they told me it was because I have a small car, and I didn't think that was a very good answer.
Sometimes, and your mileage is still pretty low, but we will see some accumulation of debris around the throttle plate, and they need periodic cleaning. And sometimes the throttle gets sticky. So when you step on the accelerator pedal, the command to open the throttle plate goes to it, but it can't respond that second, and it hangs up and delays. So it would be worth checking to make sure the throttle plate is clean and free of its bore. And this is something, your dealership or a shop's going to have to do.
Would that be under warranty still?
It could be. And the other thing is the response of the throttle to your foot sometimes is quite softened by a lot of cars. There's, you know, they feel there's a big delay in there, and yours might be on the high side.
Yeah.
But whether they can help you with that by cleaning and doing any programming, I don't know, but I would certainly ask the dealer.
Okay, Sheila, thank you. And over to Elizabeth in Peru, Mass. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi, yes, thank you. I have a Chevy Silverado truck. It's a 1500. It's a 2002, and it's having electrical issues. It started intermittently, and now it's completely, I had to have it flatbed taken away. But what happened is it, when you turn the key, nothing happens at times. And then if you turn the key and you put it in neutral, I park it on a hill, roll it forward a bit, turn the steering wheel, and then I can start it. But now I can't do that anymore because now it just, in the process of plowing, it just, everything electrical went. The needles, I shut it off, pull the key out, and I could still hear a sound like electrical, like this kind of a sound, even though the truck is off. Something is still connected. I had in the past recently replaced the key, the ignition. I had a new key made because the key was so worn you could take it out. So I had new key, new ignition, new steering, the steering column. I had that replaced. Any ideas what this possibly could be?
Was there any talk when you had all that work done, did the electrical part of the ignition switch get replaced? And you may not be able to tell me that, but that is a possibility that if the electrical part of the ignition switch hasn't been changed, that can certainly cause things to stay on. It can also prevent it from cranking or starting. So I'd be very concerned about that, if that's still the original.
Right. The what is it called again?
It's the ignition switch, but it's not the part that the key goes into and turns. That's the lock cylinder. On the other end of it, it's connected to the switch, the electrical ignition switch. I'd be concerned about that.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you. And very quickly here in the waning moment or two, Joe in Albany. Joe.
Hey, how's it going? I don't know if this is related to the last caller, but so my wife's 2004 Honda Element within like the last week or two started getting really sluggish when you start it up, like almost like it sounds like the battery's dying, but it'll start up and then maybe next time it won't do anything at all. And the next time you go to do it, it'll start up but very sluggishly. So it sounds as if the battery's dying when you're starting it up, like a very slow pace. So I'm just wondering what I should be looking at here.
So,
I don't want to look at the starter.
Well, how old is the vehicle?
It's a 2004
Element. And how old is the battery, do you know?
We've had this car for like 2 years, and I haven't replaced it.
I would certainly get the battery tested. And batteries don't always fail out flat and you're done.
No,
you
got
to be jump-started. They can get very, very weak, but keep going weak, and you'll get that slow cranking like you are on the brink of needing a jump start, and then and it starts. You might just need a battery, or your battery cables could be very corroded where they meet the battery itself, or both. But that would certainly be the starting point if you have no idea how old the battery is.
Now, aren't batteries dated? Don't they all have dates on them?
Replacements do. They do put a code or a date on them at the plant, and they also, the installer can a lot of times punch out holes of the month and the year that it was put in the car.
Yeah.
So you know when the battery was built and you know when it was put into service.
But gone are the days when you can put water in your battery.
Yeah, well, they're quote maintenance free. They hold more liquid now, so the need to fill it isn't there anymore.
All right, Joe.
But so just real quick, I don't see any other indications of like a low battery, like the lights aren't dimming or any other. The radio isn't dim, quiet, or any of those other issues.
Well, once you're running, your alternator is taking over and keeping your volts where they should be. So you won't necessarily notice any of that after the car is up and running. So
Do the lights dim inside your vehicle when you're actually trying to start it?
No, it doesn't seem to. It, what I when I observe it, it doesn't seem to.
I would get it tested. And the shop can also test the draw on the starter just in case the starter's getting tired.
All right, Gordon Fricke, well done. We're done. That was fast.
Wow, huh? It did go fast.
Good job, and we'll see you next time. Support comes from Interactive Media Consultants, LLC, celebrating 20 years providing websites, branding, social media, and digital marketing through the Capital Region and beyond. iMediaConsult.com. The Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz, presents Shakespeare's The Comedy of Errors, a farce about identical twins separated at birth, April 20th through 30th, newpaltz.edu/theater. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. And Penny Farthing Investment Management, Amherst, a socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to you for listening and for the so many great calls. Sorry if we didn't make it through to you this time, but I tell you, the phone lines load up on this program. And our producer, Jim Lavoulis, engineer, Zach Malloy. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll discuss career transition and preparation. I hope management isn't trying to tell me something. Right now, though, stand by for news.